offering dynamic career opportunities at Allaire.com.
I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection. You might find it hard to believe that the music you're hearing was not originally composed by Thelonious Monk or by Bud Powell or by Dizzy Gillespie, but by J.S. Bach. This is Bach's Sinfonia No. 5, performed by our guest, the composer, conductor, and pianist, Donal Fox. When it comes to music, Donal Fox is a uniter, not a divider. He's on a crusade to take the starch out of the stiff shirts of classical musicians and to open the eyes of jazz musicians who've de-emphasized classical technique for too long. When Donal Fox takes to the stage, the notes of Bach can become a jumping jazz jam. Harmonies of Chopin get an Afro-Cuban beat, and the raw materials of the Beethoven Sonata are transformed into a boogie-woogie. We're breaking down the rigid lines between classical and jazz music camps with Donal Fox this hour. Connection listeners, are you ready for more Bach in your jazz club or more Monk in your concert hall? More Bach in your Monk. Take the Baroque to bebop. Connection at 1-800-423-TALK. That's 1-800-423-8255. Or online at theconnection.org. Welcome, Donal Fox.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, let's just hear that out, and then you can give us some more music. Just talk me through it. This is Bach. You turn it into jazz. So where's the idea come from, and how do you go about it?
Right. This is, if you took piano lessons, this is one of those Bach inventions, the 15 three-part inventions, which early pianists struggle with to get the coordination between the three parts. And literally, I'm playing the bass line that Bach wrote between the bass and the piano, and using his harmonies and his melodic notes, adding the drums, and then extemporizing over the melody, using his notes the way Bach might have done.
Yeah, but you're saying same notes. I will have you show us in a minute. But, I mean, same notes, isn't the rhythm what makes it either jazz or classical?
That's correct. The jazz, we call jazz, invented in the 20th century in America, is that swing element, the ability where you sort of dance. But Bach danced. There's music that he wrote, his suites were dance suites, Allemande, the Cavatter. So there's a link there. And there's a link also in the way that the two musics work, and that Bach worked from a bass line, which he added these little numbers underneath called figured bass.
Okay, right. We've got the theory. We've heard the end product. Let's hear the process.
The process. So let's go back to the Sinfonia 5. That's Bach, right?
Oh, that's Bach, yeah.
So what was different when you heard in the opening? We're accenting notes, right?
But how do you get from one to the other? I mean, is it just simply, say, just take the same note sequence and put in a bit of syncopation? And the question is really, why and what does it prove?
Oh, it's not trying to prove anything. It's just trying to make music and have music that's happy and fun and that there are no preconceived boundaries of what the category of music is. It should be open for all of us to explore, and it either is good or it's bad, as Duke Ellington said. What type of music do you play?
So let's
good
look.
Or bad music. Good music.
Good music or bad. There's only good music and bad music. I suppose you could say that. But I mean, there are people who love classical music.
Right.
There are people who love jazz. They don't often meet in the middle.
That can be right. It has to do with categories. As we know in pop music, you know, you have country, western, Motown, soul. Everybody sort of picks their camps. But what's interesting is in this whole thing with Napster and the ability to take music off the internet, it's actually increased people's ability to listen across the lines, across cultural lines, and across their own little circles of feeling. So it's a product. It's basically who I am. I was brought up listening to J.S. Bach and playing the classical piano and loved the early masters of Beethoven, Mozart, Bach. And I also heard Jolly Parker and Miles Davis and the writer Spring by Stravinsky.
You do have good taste, though.
Yeah. So I said, why should I have to constantly be separating these entities?
So let's hear, I think it's Air from a Goldberg Variation 18, isn't it? You're going to show us how you compose. Take one piece and transform it.
Oh, okay. Now this actually... Okay, great. Yeah,
I should make clear you're not playing this now. I was misinformed. This is one we cooked earlier. Right.
Right. This is my trio with bass, drums, and piano. And it's the Goldberg Variation number 18. Bach wrote 32 variations. It's basically a canon in the two upper voices. And the bass is playing through Bach's bass line again. But adding that swing element and the little lilt and the twist to it, we appreciate Bach's structure and the harmony, and yet there's an element to it that's very modern and danceable.
Do you keep, you say you keep the bass line. Would you keep all the tunes, or would you make some of the more, you know, whimsical, overlay it with a different melody?
Yeah, sometimes they're complete transformations, which then they become my compositions. That would be composing, recomposing, taking motives or elements of Bach's ideas, and then making into really a new piece, which I think later we have an example of that with the Chopin Prelude, was completely transformed.
Connection listeners, I want to know what you think. I mean, do you love jazz? Do you love classical? Do you think this is dreadful what he's doing? Do you think it's great? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Let's talk, Donal Fox,
yes,
about the personalities. I mean, I think you want to prove to us that the classical composers were really hip guys.
Oh, absolutely. You ever see Bach with his wig off?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, he was a cool. He's the first swinging cat.
But I mean, what you mean musically?
Musically, yeah. See, historically, there were no divisions between being a composer, being a performer, being a conductor. In Bach's time, and as we know up through Beethoven, you played your own music. All those composers could improvise beautifully. The great stories of Beethoven extemporizing entire sonatas, and then they would write the material down to obviously document it. Also, there were no tape recorders at the time, right? No way to record the material. You had to write it down to remember it, plus publishing, of course, was a way that you made your living, where now we have different ways of documenting music with recording processes, the internet, and so forth.
But isn't it the case, like certainly with the Bach family, I mean, they're all musicians, mm-hmm, that they used to have just, well, maybe you call it improvising and maybe they called it composing. Like they'd just have jam sessions that went on all night and J.S.
Well,
and C.P.
thing.
would play a bit and try and this, and then eventually sort of the best bits got written down. Same thing? Same thing.
Composing.
Same process.
Here. We could at least say improvisation is spontaneous composition. I'm a composer. Most of the ideas, or if you're a writer, or I'm sure that many times you want to put something down. Before you put it on paper, you sort of think about it. You might talk about it with your friends, have sort of what you call verbal jam sessions around a round table discussion. And you start writing these notes on your piece of paper, little outlines, you know, thoughts. And then at some point you say, I want to codify this. I want to really, really work it out and get the details. And that's when you start composing prose, composing music. But the idea that you would just not in any way have these, you know, inspirational moments where you can just sort of play around with the material, that is composition.
Do you think that is the direct link you're trying to show between classical and jazz? Because every kind of music takes from the previous form of music. I mean, mm-hmm, most classical things are just loads of folk tunes.
Exactly.
Put together. I mean, Beethoven plundered hundreds of them.
Exactly.
But why make the link between the two that sound so different, classical to jazz? Just because they were your two favorites?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just because it's great music. I mean, that the Goldberg... I mean, here, if we go back to that, and I play it here if we can.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a conventional way. Of course, I'm a product of the century I live in. And so when I hear that line, I think, oh, there's so many different ways of playing that. Sort of a Gouldian way, Glenn Gould, which had a whole other approach of interpreting Bach, you know. We'll sing too. They had to put a screen up because he would sing so loud when he played. So, I mean, how about, you know... just different interpretive approaches. And this is one more to add the colors to the music and really honor Bach, honor the act of composition and inventiveness. And he would come down here and say, great, and he'd probably sit down at this piano with me and pull out some beautiful line. I'd be in awe of what he would do over his own material.
Connection listeners, particularly if you're musicians, what do you think about this great, big, happy musical family? 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What's coming up next? Air on a G-string, is it?
Mm-hmm. Classic, beautiful melody. Just, you know, it's funny because you think of context. We talk about... we'll just listen for a minute. There's just Bach and his purity. And what's interesting is, to, as you were talking about earlier, crossing these cultural lines. If you're in a concert hall, sometimes these expectations that you can't, you know, breathe or relax and be with the music. And in the jazz club that you think, you know, so here you sort of cross it. Here's this beautiful...
well, that sounds sort
piece.
Of jazzy without as
exactly.
a classical piece,
yeah.
because it's sort of laid back. But
yeah.
This is a kind of odd piece because it's sort of the same mood,
mm-hmm.
whichever way you play. It's not true what you're playing before. The mood really changes when you switch the rhythm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and here, now if you listen, you'll see we start adding a little bit of inflection.
Well, as you can hear, Connection listeners, we're talking music this hour, the premise that classical composers laid the foundations for jazz. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. He's Donal Fox. I'm Judy Swallow. You're listening to The Connection on NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at noon, the story of a man just released...
jazz and classical connection. It's a musical theme this hour, but don't ask what music. It's all one big happy family. My guest, who fuses the two, is Donal Fox. Listeners, you can join the conversation. We won't ask you to sing. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. talked, and I'll Fox talk us through what's going on there.
This was a great experience. This was a concerto written by a young composer named Anthony M. Kelly, where in the way that in Mozart's time, Mozart left his cadenzas open in the concertos. And in fact, a lot of those early scores, there were no piano parts written whatsoever for Mozart, only the orchestral part. That's how much Mozart improvised in his own time. So Anthony wanted to capture that spontaneity in the concert hall and left all the cadenzas open, is what you're hearing now. I'm playing cadenza where I'm actually improvising in real time with his themes from his concerto.
It does sound a bit like in the movie when, you know, Mozart's having a tantrum. But this is the pianist improvising over. The orchestra's playing it straight, it sounds like.
Yeah, the orchestra has this completely notated. This is the same process that goes on in Mozart concertos, Beethoven concertos, Brahms concertos. We've just lost the ability, unfortunately, in the way that we're taught in school, particularly in the classical and the conservatory, of how to make your own cadenzas. There are performers out there who are doing that more and more in the early music tradition, and I think David Levine is very good with that. Levin, I believe his name's. And where they're going back, and they're actually playing those cadenzas at the moment. And that makes the music thrilling. That's what Mozart wanted.
800-423-8255 is the number, 800-423-TALK. You're telling me, you know, this is the way the great composers work. This is the stuff that they were playing. This is the way they played it. Why don't we hear it this way?
Yeah. No. This particular style, that's not necessarily. This is a more contemporary romantic style. The concept, though, of playing and extemporizing was throughout history. You can go and read about it. It's just documented. Why doesn't it happen now? It's really education. It's this. We always specialize. We're so specialized now in society. You know, you have. Everybody sort of, I do this, but I don't do that. You know, I'm a lawyer, so I don't do plumbing in my house. Or
Do you think we've actually refined the classical work, so we actually sort of write it more rigidly than maybe they wanted it played?
I believe so. I believe that, and the insight all I have, of course, is subjective. It's just being a creator myself, being a composer. When I write a piece and I give it to a performer, and I'm writing some piano etudes now for concert pianist, and he'll call me up and he'll say, well, what do you want to do with that? I said, well, this is the feeling. Go with it. You don't have to follow my notes to the letter. That this is the way that an actor interprets a play. You wouldn't want them reading very rigidly like, well, Margaret, what do you think now? Well, I mean, they have to...
I've heard a few like that.
Yeah.
Andrew, let's hear what you think. Hi, Andrew.
Hi. I'm a conductor and a pianist from Buffalo, New York, and I just wanted to comment that I think this is a wonderful way of looking at classical music. We're very focused in the symphony world of trying to grab younger audiences, and I think classical music is such an ivory tower that this kind of approach is really a way to take it back and to get younger people excited about it.
Donal, I think you've got a fan there. Andrew, tell us about your kind of music.
Well, largely what I end up doing on a regular concert basis, unfortunately, is pretty standard repertoire. I mean, it's great to get to do that, to get to do Bach and Beethoven and Brahms on a regular basis, because the work is so marvelous. But I find that young composers especially are really ignored in this country in mm-hmm. favor of sort of the old masters. And I think that's partially because of the high modernism of the 50s and 60s turned a lot of people off to contemporary composition, and I think this sort of gives us a new lease on that.
Can I ask you both, though, you don't think it's a case of, like with so many other things, they say, oh, well, the young kids can't be interested in the classics, so let's dumb it down, lighten it up a bit. We're not doing musical dumbing down.
No.
I'm going to have two men very mad at me.
No, I don't think. If you think this is musically dumbing down, I mean, I think that speaks for itself. There's nothing been dumbed down at all. We're talking about you want music to survive. And if you're talking about the classical music, see if Andrew agrees with me, it's dying off. I mean, just the numbers. How many recordings of a Beethoven Fifth Symphony can you have on the market? And who cares? And of all the people who go to Symphony Hall, we call it the seat of gray hair. You're not reaching a new generation. If you keep going in this sort of an archival way, there won't be symphony orchestras and there won't be, quote, classical music as we know it.
Andrew, thanks very much for those thoughts. 800-423-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-423-TALK. Daniel would like to join us. Daniel.
I'd like to second everything that your guest and the conductor had said. I was a musician for a bit of time back in my young days. Went to Hart College of Music in the 70s. It's probably an open secret that some of the best musicians at these institutions have always explored combining various musical styles, and especially jazzing Bach and Mozart. We've seen, especially Bach, who through composed structure seems to lend itself to a kind of jazz approach. And I also wanted to point out that there's a great recording of the Goldberg Variations by, I think I have the name right, the Jacques Lavoisier Trio.
Oh, yeah, Jacques Lussier, the French.
Lussier, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's a great, great recording.
Yeah, he's fabulous.
And your work sounds wonderful also. I'd just like to encourage it. So that's basically it. The other thing I wanted to ask, if I could, it just came to mind.
Mm-hmm.
One of my pet peeves about jazz combined with classical sometimes is that there's a recording, for example, of one of the Mozart concertos where,
Bobby McFerrin and Chick Corea?
The other modern jazz pianist who recorded it.
Okay, I'll have to come in here before it gets too detailed.
No, Keith Jarrett maybe you're thinking of.
Keith Jarrett. Ah. He came through with a cadenza which completely destroyed the motive and integrity of the piece. And that's my only objection, is when people combine one form and another, that they somehow also maintain the motivic and rhythmic integrity of the whole thing.
I agree. I mean, you have to really, work very hard to make sure you have that integrity. Totally agree with you.
Daniel, thanks very much for raising that point, because we can then go smoothly into our next piece of music, which proves that Donal Fox does not have a monopoly on this sort of fusion. We're going to hear Bud Powell playing The Blue Note Years, the best of Bud Powell. Yes, not the Bud Powell you're used to, is it? That's Bud on Bach. Donal Fox is here with me. Donal, you do a similar sort of thing.
Right, well, actually, I heard this recording of Bud. I said, wow. And so I took it further, and I call it Fox Meets Bud Bach. And this piece you probably recognize. One of those early pieces.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can play over what that's playing, and you hit practice. Okay. Now, in this, these harmonies. Now we're just having fun. We can go back into the Bach. And so it's just fun. That's really, an obvious...
It's really fun. I'm going to ask you a really stupid question, because I was watching your hands whip over the keyboards and remembering sort of, piano lessons. Would it be harder for a kid to learn that way or easier? If one hand's doing one thing and another's doing another...
Oh, yeah, that is hard. No, that's not your beginning.
No, but one's playing your jazz and one's playing your classic line there.
But what I would hope is
it's tough.
Here's the thing. How many of your friends, for example, I know, there's a lot of people I meet and they say, oh, yeah, I took piano lessons. I said, how long? 12, 13 years. I said, well, what happened? I don't play anymore. I said, what happened? Well, that teacher, I wanted to play ragtime. They wouldn't let me play it. And then they kept, hitting my hand when I played a wrong note. And, if you come and study with me, for example, or at any class, a master class, say, hey, if you feel like doing something with the music, it's okay. Nobody's going to punish you for that, as long as the other caller said that you respect where that tradition of that music is and you go back to it. And that's the fun of this, is to leave that freedom of that sort of when you're in a sandbox, you know, you're just playing around the sand as a kid. That sense of a weird freshness and newness, to keep that in your music throughout your whole life.
Well, you gave me a piece of music here with two versions, Monk and Bach.
Yeah, this is it. Because people say, well, what does Monk and Bach have to do with each other? You know, we have J.S. Bach, and we have T.S. Monk.
We've got Ugly Beauty by Monk and Little Prelude in C minor.
Right, so here's the Bach Prelude. Okay, that we're playing it traditionally, right? And here's a Monk, beginning of the Monk Ugly Beauty. What you notice between the two is that they both are in 3/4. They have three beats per measure. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. They both have these bass lines. This is Monk. Now I'm going to go to the Bach after I finish this. Here we go to the Bach. Ready? Related now. Now we go back to Monk.
That's great. I was wondering, you know, if Monk and Bach lived in the same period, if they'd be sort of jamming, and who'd win out? You know, who say, this is my idea. No, this is my idea. This is my rhythm. No. That'd
be great. That'd be a great movie, right?
Hold that thought and make that million. And if you'd like to join in, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Justin, not just jazz and classical, yeah? Justin from Orangeburg, South Carolina. Hello?
Hey, I just wanted to say that I greatly appreciate what you do, bringing the two forms of music together.
Thank you.
I think if everybody could knock down their walls in all genres and realize the ultimate thing we're all trying to do as musicians is just learn more, learn more ways of structuring songs. I think if maybe some kids studying Bach could take a look at what Miles Davis did, say like in the Bitches Brew session.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would all just learn loads more, which ultimately what we all want to do is learn a way to express ourselves better. I think by learning more like this, it would be wonderful.
Well, Justin, we could say that, you know, we could get really philosophical and say that about lots of other areas of life. Tell us about your music.
I make hip-hop music on my computer, which, strings together several different types of music depending on, say, you know, what I would want to sample or whatnot. I like to use a lot of jazz samples, just being a jazz fan. I bring together, I might, you know, sample Led Zeppelin and then add, like, an old orchestra piece on top of it. Or, I mean, you know, it could go on. You know, you could do anything.
We're sort of, in a way, we're breaking down the class structures in
art.
That's right. And that's great.
And what do you think fuses in hip-hop, Danny? Justin, sorry.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you said, you know, that you're applying this to your hip-hop music. How?
Just by not being scared to do anything I feel like with the music. It doesn't matter what you blend together, what anybody thinks about what you blend together.
Mm-hmm.
I think by breaking down all walls and rules, you just open everything up for a better playing field. Everybody's not so worried about being a purist or not so hard this way or that way. We can all come together to ultimately... Mm-hmm. Make a better type of music that doesn't have a category.
Justin, thanks very much.
Thank you. And also, maybe a better society. I mean, that's really the underlying theme here, right? That's a microcosm of thinking about how we can live in this world. I mean, the story in the top of the hour.
Well, indeed.
Yeah.
But I mean, isn't different better? Diversity?
Oh, diversity, but not just, you know, not exclusive, but inclusive. In other words, acknowledging your differences, but honoring them in a way that says that, you know, that you want to learn from each other, not in a separate way.
I think you've just cued yourself in again.
I have the controls, huh?
I have the controls here. Just tell us a bit about this.
Oh, this is Monk's Bright Mississippi, which we're playing in sort of a New Orleans jazz style. This is pretty much straight-ahead jazz. What's interesting, this Monk added his melody over a bunch of chord changes that are known as Sweet Georgia Brown. So within the jazz idiom, there's these overlappings of traditional material that you add your own melodic lines and transform them.
There you go. You're listening to the Jazz and Classical Connection. I'm Judy Swallow.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at Noon,
by the Allaire Corporation.
I'm Judy Swallow. This is the Jazz and Classical Connection. You've never heard him. So, a question. Beethoven and Basie, if they'd lived in the same century, would they have been playing the same tune? The man who floats between the two, Donal Fox, is my guest. If you'd like to join the conversation, sing to us at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What you're listening to there is Chopin in Anguilla.
Yeah, Anguilla. You know, have you been there?
No. I've heard of Chopin, though. I've heard of Chopin. Donal Fox, that really is Chopin as we've never heard him. We've heard Bach as we've never heard him.
Yeah, now let's see if you can... Do you know this prelude? There's a point where I give it away. But this comes out of a moment...
You leave clues in there.
Clues.
This was once classical music, folks.
Yeah, now this is a transformation. This is where I'm not really trying to say, for anybody that's really in the audience, know that this is a Chopin piece. I mean, I have it in the title. But now, how do you say Anguilla? I was there and I was inspired by the Caribbean music, and when I came home, I was warming up, you know, after not playing for a couple weeks on vacation, and played this prelude.
Go ahead, go ahead.
Would you know, right?
I was actually going to ask the Connection listeners, you know, if they could spot the Chopin in the piece we just... So play it again. Let's hear.
So here I am, just, you know, those big chords to get your piano warmed up. And then we go here, right? And I'm now thinking about being back in the Caribbean. I'm gonna go. And so I just developed.
Interesting,
it.
You said the Caribbean, because during the break, I'll let you into some connections. He called me Prissy, basically, didn't you? a traditionalist from Europe. And, you know, saying, oh, gosh, you're breaking.
What are you doing?
What are you doing to Chopin? Can you do it to anybody? Can you do it to Beethoven? I mean, the composers were very different people. Jazz greats are very different people.
Right. I don't think
are there natural marriages? You know,
I think so. I think Bach is definitely a natural marriage in the way that his music is constructed with these fantastic bass lines and thorough bass and in the way he composed building melodies over bass lines, which is the way that jazz is built. You know, there are places I won't go. I don't think it's going to, you know, a Wagner or Beethoven. I don't know if I would. Maybe some pieces, you know, we could try, but no, it's not a game just to go, oh, let's just jazz this up, let's jazz that up. It's really something that I'm inspired by in playing. And usually when I'm playing the music traditionally, I'm just playing, you know, I mean.
It's very soothing, this classic music. I mean, we've been talking about traditions and, you know, the links between the two. It should be said that really scandalizing is a great musical tradition, isn't it? You know, Mozart scandalized the musical community of the day.
Beethoven.
As did Beethoven. I mean,
Beethoven,
when the Romantics came in, shocking.
Oh, well, Beethoven started a romantic movement. You know, I mean, composers, up to Beethoven's time, we had to eat with the servants. I mean, they were part of that lower class. An aristocracy in Europe. So as the burgeoning middle class in Europe developed, artists, this whole thing we think of artists as individual expression started to develop. And Beethoven was one of the first. You know, he came and said, I am not eating back there. I eat up front. I teach your family members.
That's a great English accent you're trying to. I think he was Austrian, actually.
Yeah, no, he was. Yeah.
Bo, what would you like to say? It's 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, and Bo is joining us. Bo.
Yes, and I work in diversity and cultural competence. I was really interested in the looking at this musical crossover as a metaphor, and I think of three artists in particular who I think are very interesting in crossing over. One is Sweet Honey and the Rock, a second, Tish Hinojosa, and a third, Jaden Sarsaparilla, and each of them really cross cultures as well as metaphors. Sweet Honey is typically a gospel group, but one of my mm-hmm. favorite pieces they did was to take the Cahil Gibran, a piece of the prophet called On Children, mm-hmm. and send it to their own music, and it's just marvelous and totally different than what you might expect from them. Tish Hinojosa is Mexican-American. She's Chicana, and she writes all of her music in Spanish and English, so you're going back and forth between the cultures and does really a nice mix of fun stuff. And Jaden Sarsaparilla is was a duo, a lesbian couple here in Boston, and part of what they did was original music, but they would also take things like Gimme a Pigfoot, you know, which you can hear Billie Holiday do, and they would do it in a very folksy, bluesy kind of way, and it's just very different, but very true to the original music mm-hmm. as well.
Well, I think Bo's making the point there. Thanks for that, Bo, that, you know, melting pots of all varieties work really, really well.
Right.
But you were talking about which marriages do work, which ones don't. I mean, you've sort of been going from the classical, the early classical, coming
well,
into the
Baroque period, we call it Baroque. Baroque.
Into jazz. I mean, what about more modern composers?
Oh, yeah. I think it's really easy with the contemporary. You get a different. The marriage actually between contemporary classical, say music starting from the 40s on, and contemporary jazz is very, very close because there's this sort of angular. Let's take a sort of a Schoenbergian. You know, you've heard sort of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now you could, you know. You can do this, what you call this free jazz and the contemporary classical. That's been married, actually, in the 60s. Ornette Coleman and a number of other figures brought that forward. But the main thing here, I think the underlying thing, which I like to talk about more, is the social value of this. This really comes from our 21st century now. And we're talking about one planet, one world, where we have to learn to communicate, understand each other's language and each other's cultures and respect those and honor those. And we can't keep standing on our particular sides of our in our platforms or have this hierarchical point of view of what's better or not better. You know, is
no. On the other hand, all human beings can't be sort of a mid shade of light brown. I mean, diversity is a good thing. Is there a danger with what you're doing?
Well, actually, that may be the case over the long period of time in evolution. I mean, this is one of the things that I think some people are afraid of. I mean, you have, I mean, the intermarriages that happen between Asians and Africans and Europeans.
Okay, but we're still going to be different.
Yeah, well, that's right. We have our personalities. We have our interests. You know, I love, wine for Culturon, right? Does that mean I don't want to go get a McDonald's hamburger at times? Right? I mean, you have all these different foods, and there's different moods for different things you're going to do. And to say that you're only going to have French cuisine, and I've never eat, sauerkraut or something, is missing life's experiences.
I think we can take a few more calls. Let's hear from you. 800, I see the number on the wall. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, if you'd like to join in our conversation with Danal Fox. George would like to. George.
I do. This used to be called third stream music back in the 50s and early 60s. And one of the great proponents of it was the Modern Jazz Quartet. I'm looking at a Modern Jazz Quartet album called Blues on Bach,
right,
which is a great exemplar of what you're talking about. And you also have Andre Previn, who went from being a jazz and film composer to a conductor of symphony orchestras, and Günther Schuller. And last Saturday night in New England Conservatory, there was a great bill that I unfortunately didn't see, which started off with selections from Duke Ellington's Suite, The River, and then went into Charles Ives' Second Symphony. And I'm also looking at a magazine that I get called Piano Today, and in it there's an exercise.
George, we get the idea. You really love this. Yep.
Yeah. Well, I play music, and it's all music, and let me just say that Walter Norris in this Piano Today from fall 2000 has what he calls a first stride piece, which is a reworking of Chopin's Etude, Opus 25, Number 4, as a ragtime stride piano piece.
Hmm.
You know, so this has been going on for a long time, not only from jazz to classical, but from classical to jazz.
Absolutely.
And I would also like to say one other thing. You mentioned the Caribbean. I like to listen to world music, and I didn't really understand the polyrhythms until I was visiting an island called Guadeloupe.
Mm.
And I walked out for dinner one night, and I listened to the contrapuntal rhythms of all the different birds in the bushes as the sun was going down.
Now this brings up a good point. Go tangentially from your point, George. I mean, are there some things you cannot incorporate? I mean, for example, when you have different musical systems in Asian music, in Arabic music, would that be impossible?
No, I think there are lots of bridges. We can. Philip Glass, the minimalist movement, he was very much enamored by Indian music. Mercion, the French composer, actually composed a lot of his pieces using bird songs and the rhythms thereon, as this caller was mentioning, hearing birds, the natural speak of our environment, which has counterpoint and rhythmical counterpoint. So if you're inspired by a particular sound of music and it's really in your blood and you live and breathe it, I imagine you'll do something creative with it.
Now, I think you've had a lot of fans on this program, but I think you might have
Judy,
you're
not my fan yet?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Patrick, hi.
Hello, thank you. I wanted to bring back the question you raised earlier about whether we're dumbing down music by doing this in any way, shape, or form. I'd like to recast the question by suggesting we think about this in terms of language. A language is constantly changing, and I don't think anyone would argue that the American Academy is in any way dumbed down by changing our English from British English in any way, shape, or form. I'd point to the music of Charles Ives and the way he brought ragtime in it, and I don't think there is music any.
Oh, I don't think I was hinting that it was dumbing down, but you were making that point, Donal, that you can apply this to many areas of life.
Yes, yes. I think it's the openness. I mean, the callers are talking about this sense of freedom that, you know, like, again, if I go to that sandbox analogy, when we're children, we don't have those boundaries. You know, we're playing. We don't have boundaries in the sense of our race and class background. And as we grow up, adults tell us that we can or cannot do certain things.
But are you actually creating what's going to be a new genre?
No, I'm not trying to set up any new school. I'm not really interested in the school per se. I just want artists and creative people to be free with their creativity and to share that with their listeners in the world, and hopefully make the world a better place by that process.
800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK, and it's not just musicians with instruments. Betty's on the line. Betty.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What would you like to say?
Well, actually, Donnell, I met you years ago at a private concert with David Whitten performing, and I think you were sitting beside me, and we spoke for a few moments.
Would you two like me to step outside? Yes, Betty, you're a singer, aren't you?
Won't be necessary. Yes. And actually, I also live in Boston, and I really like what Donnell is saying because, you know, on multiple levels, from the social standpoint, my child happens to be biracial, and, you know, and so that has, you know, certain ramifications, mm-hmm. pro and con, you might say. But in terms of music, you know, being a musician who was trained in all different styles, and I like performing different styles of music, and my specialty is in klezmer music, I have to say that what you're doing is great because,
you
just keep doing one style over and over, and there are catalogs of musicians just continuing to do classical music, well, that's great, but then the music, there's a fear that the music will remain static.
Betty, let's hear some more music now. Thanks very much for your thought. Thank you, too, to my guest today, composer Donnell Fox. We're going out with the first movement of the original ballet composed by Donnell Fox called Gone City. Connection listeners, if you're in Boston, if you're in the Boston area, Donnell Fox will be performing his program Bach and Monk with his trio at the Regatta Bar in Cambridge on Saturday, March the 17th, St. Patrick's Day. You can also continue the Baroque to Bebop conversation on our website at theconnection.org. I'm Judy Swallow. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by the listeners of WBUR Boston, where The Connection is produced, and by the Allaire Corporation.